You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. I'm proud to welcome two members of the NSPS ABET team. We have Jason Reset, who is our, I'm not sure what we call you, Jason. You're our head guy, I guess.
team chair welcome. And society liaison.
Well, welcome to the show. And we have Bob Schmidt, who, welcome, Bob.
Good morning.
Bob perhaps knows more about ABET than anybody in the world, and is our soon-to-be board member and has a longtime participant in the program for, on our behalf. So welcome to both of you to the show today. This is a topic that comes up relatively often, actually quite often, among our membership and our leadership about exactly how it works and what our roles are and what do we need to keep a strong team. I know we've done recruitment in the past, and I know Jason's going to talk a little bit about what that commitment is, and sometimes it ends up some of the folks who think they're interested decide they're not interested after they find out what that commitment is. But it is important to keep a strong team, and Jason and Bob are going to talk about that today. So with that, maybe, Jason, you can give a little bit of background about yourself, and then we'll have Bob do that, and then we'll start talking about NSPS and ABET.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. I became involved with ABET around 2002 when I first did my training, and for several years I wasn't invited on any visits, and in 2007 I became much more involved with ABET, and since that time I've been fortunate to go on many visits. I'm currently serving as the NSPS liaison and also the chair of the NSPS ABET committee. I've been on the executive on the Applied Science Commission. This is my third year, and I've been elected to the executive committee beginning in July next year.
Okay, Bob.
I became involved with an organization that accredited engineering and engineering technology programs. Its name wasn't ABET. Its name was the Engineers Council on Professional Development, ECPD, which is the forerunner of ABET. That's why I go back so far. I did several accreditation visits as a program evaluator. I then was appointed to the Technology Accreditation Commission, where I served as program chair. Then I got appointed to the executive committee, and I was chair of TAC for 1995. Then I took a hiatus, and now I'm guess I'm scheduled to go to the board of directors, and I was the NSPS rep this past spring because of the full-time member being unable to make the meeting. So I go back to the 80s.
I remember in our conversations on the phone the other day, you were talking about having mentioned to someone when the offices were in New York and they had no clue.
That's correct.
So and I wouldn't have either because, of course, I haven't been around the situation that long, but it's been in the Baltimore area as long as I know, I've known.
I think there's only two people on the ABET staff that go back to New York.
Wow.
That's correct. The one's retired. So there's only one, and she deals with all of the commissions, and her name is Ellen Stokes, and what a wonderful person she is.
Yes, absolutely.
While we're on the topic and before we get into details, it might be good, and Bob, maybe this, well, actually, either one of you can explain this. On the Technology Accreditation Commission, it has a new name now, and its acronym is ETAC. Is there any background that our listeners should need to know about why that changed, or was it just a internal thing?
I couldn't answer. That was during my...
I don't know the answer to that question either.
Okay. Well, I don't know either, or I wouldn't have asked.
my guess is, Kurt, that there had always been some confusion about technology because of other groups that do accreditation in the field of technology. And so they wanted to make it clear that this was not one of those groups, and so they put the acronym in front of it. They put the word in front of it, engineering, to fit that it really fit like most of the engineering programs. Because
they
had other such programs covered in other commissions.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. Certainly a logical conclusion to draw. So I would accept that as being correct, and somebody will have to tell us if we're wrong. One other component that NSPS has in ABET is through the Industry Advisory Council, which is, and either one of you can chime in about what it actually does, but it's an opportunity for organizations like ours to have someone on that board, not necessarily representing us, but someone we recommend. And currently John Matanich, who I know Jason knows, I'm not sure if Bob knows John or not. John is from Michigan and a past NSPS president and our government affairs chair. But he's been on the advisory council now for a few years. And that group, perhaps either of you might have some insight into what they provide.
Go ahead, Jim.
Bob, I defer to you if you'd like.
Sure. The group was formed by the board. It's one of the standing groups, and they have this group so that they bring the real world component into the accreditation standards. They don't want to be solely relying on the faculty and the schools, and they continue this concept through the schools, requiring the schools to have some type of industrial advisory committee themselves. So ABET tries to bring in the leadership of people in the industry and to advise the ABET board and the executive director. That's what this one is.
Right, I see. And that's interesting that the Industry Advisory Committee is part of that component, because I assume if a school is going to seek accreditation, they would have to have set up one of these. And the reason that's of interest to me is I actually sit on that advisory committee for the program at Troy in Alabama. And they set it up from the very beginning, even though they were going to be a while before they pursued accreditation. And they had a lot of help from people who already knew. Dave Gibson was really involved in that program, so he knew that they were going to need this going forward. Sounds as though if someone is thinking about starting a new program, they're going to seek accreditation, it'd be a good idea to establish that industry advisory committee right away.
Right, and I'm sure that the ETAC and the EAC, And therefore, I believe all of ABET, if you want to start up an accredited program, you can contact the headquarters, and you can get a consultant from ABET to go out and look at your program.
Oh, I see. Okay. As sort of a first step to see where you stand, so to speak.
Right. I can't do that. Jason can't do that. We're still, involved with ABET. But I did that during my hiatus because I was involved with ABET. I was involved with regional accreditation. And I got recommended to go to the school that was looking for assistance.
We've got, a couple, 3 minutes before our first break, but one of the things you mentioned, Jason, going at the very beginning was that in 2002 you did your first training, and then it was quite some time before you actually went on a visit. Maybe it's worth spending a minute or two talking to people about the fact that that can happen and not to get discouraged. And I know that when you were going through that process, it had to be confusing for you, too. So maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, ABET is something that a person does. Becoming a program evaluator is the first step in becoming involved with ABET. And that can, generally what NSPS likes to do is a person will go to their face-to-face training in Baltimore the first year. And then following that, we'd like to get a person on a program visit. And we generally try to do that as an observer with a non-surveying program, because once you visit a program, you cannot participate or visit that program ever again. And then we try to get you on your first visit. Well, because of the way the accreditation cycle works, and NSPS is responsible for accrediting approximately 31 surveying programs, it may be some time before you get two or three or four visits. You may get one right after another the first couple of years, or you may go on a visit and then not go on another one for several years. Right now, we're in the second year of a six-year accreditation cycle, and NSPS this year, we reviewed only two programs. This year, we'll review two more next year, and then the next 3 years are 6, 8, and 10. So you can see the, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, we'll be very busy. But right now, we're sort of in the middle of a slow period. So if somebody is not on an accreditation visit the first couple of years, don't be surprised, because this is something that you commit to for a long time in your career. Several, you know, a couple of decades, you could be that involved. Once you get five visits under your belt, then a lot more opportunities will be available to you to serve on commissions in other aspects of the ABET program.
Yeah, I think that was an important thing you mentioned about the visit where you go not as an evaluator, not being one that you might go to later. I think people may maybe miss out on that distinction sometimes and wonder, why am I going to that? But it makes perfect sense. You don't want to burn up a visit, so to speak, and that makes a lot of sense.
It's been very important for us in recent years, because we have a very limited number of evaluators. And I'll give you an example. For the second visit that I was assigning program evaluators for this year, there were only two people available out of all of our folks. And that's because either they've already been to the program or people just don't have the availability. And so it's it just happens like that. That's the way it works.
Yeah, all the more reason, though, and I know we only got a few seconds before the break, but all the more reason to try to keep the pool as fully staffed as possible, even though people may not be going on visits right away, because it is going to become an issue at some point. So
yes.
Let's go to our first break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to to the NSPS Radio Hour today with Jason Reset and Bob Schmidt. We were having a little conversation during the break about the evaluation visits and how important they are and how important the mentoring is. And I don't know if either of you want to expand on that discussion at all before we move ahead or not, but you're certainly welcome to if you wish.
Well, as I was pointing out, there have been exceptions made, and usually they don't work out for the best. But there has been a big change that has transpired over the years, and that's because of outcome assessments. And these days, the majority of the work that the program evaluator does is really done prior to the visit. And at the visit, they're there to check out to see, you know, they're there to verify what they read. And in the past, all their paperwork was done at the visit. Now the paperwork's supposed to be done before the visit, submitted to the team chair. And it's a much different thing. So as the program evaluator, you have the time to budget for your free time prior to the visit. And when the visit's over, your work is done.
I would agree with that. What I tell people that are new evaluators, generally this is what happens. When you go to the pre-visit or the face-to-face training, before you go there in Baltimore, there's about 20 hours of homework that has to be done, and it's done through a simulated visit. Now, ABET will tell you it takes about 20 hours. The feedback that I've received from people that are doing it for the first time is that it's more than 20 hours. And the reason for that is because ABET's website and ABET training, all the information is available to program evaluators and team chairs alike. It's all available online, but it's not always easy to find. And ABET is a pretty complicated structure organization if you're not involved with it. When you're looking at it for the first time, on the outside looking in, it's very involved. And so one of the things that the three of us had talked about last week was a mentoring program. And for the people that are new program evaluators that are going out as observers this year, they're working with people that are not part of NSPS. They're working with engineering technology programs that in disciplines other than surveying. So some of the things that the folks are being asked to do may not resonate with what they've done in their training. And so that's where having a program mentor becomes important.
And I would assume that under that situation, unless you had a mentoring program or at least some mechanism for those people to better understand why the process is done the way it is, that it could make one become discouraged, I suppose. Seems to me like that.
Well, it's very challenging. Generally speaking, I'll try and confer with the new program evaluators who are going out as observers. I try to stay in the loop with them currently just to let them know that it will be challenging, but if you have any questions, give us a call. The reason it's so important that they learn, or these folks learn and really get exposed to what it's like to be on their own, is because right now the way ABET handles program evaluations is, unless it's a new program, there is only one team chair and one program evaluator. So the team chair is not necessarily expert in the discipline that is being evaluated, because the team chair's responsibility is to deal with university leadership. So it's our program evaluators that are dealing with, that are basically the subject matter experts. So the first visit's always complicated. The second visit, it gets a little bit easier. And then each one after that, it becomes quite a bit easier if you go out every year. If you have a one-year hiatus or a two-year hiatus, sometimes it's almost like learning it from scratch. And so, you know, we like to stay in touch with our program evaluators as much as possible and give them the support that they need, just as a refresher, if nothing else.
When you were talking about the training earlier, am I correct that some of the PEV training that is now online, people actually had to go somewhere and take that training before?
Well, What ends up in years past, it used to be, we used to do it at the ACSM conferences.
Right.
But there's quite a different set of training now. Now they call it, ABET calls it face-to-face training. And what it involves a person doing a simulated visit, spending approximately 20 hours of doing homework ahead of time, and then they go to Baltimore for 2 days, or it might even be 3 days, I don't totally recall. But they'll go to Baltimore, and they'll interface with a team just as if they were going on a university visit to give them as much exposure as to how a visit runs without actually being on a visit. And it's quite intense. Anything you do with ABET is intense. It's a lot of work. It's long hours when you do it, but it is quite rewarding, and it's a very good way to give back to the profession.
Since we're talking about such a long-term commitment and based on everything you guys have said with the training that's involved and then the visits that need to be addressed and the fact that there are so many programs even within our group, and I want to talk about that in a minute too, somebody coming in should be prepared for, is there a magic number that says you need to be prepared to spend this much time, or is that dependent on things you may want to do, like if you want to get more involved in commission leadership and that kind of thing?
Well,
so if
you're
coming
going
in
to
as a PEV, for example.
If you're just coming in as a PEV, let's assume that you've done your face-to-face training and so forth in your observer visit. Generally speaking, as Bob mentioned, most of your work is done before the visit. And what I found is somebody doing this for the very first time and trying to do a very thorough job, it would not be uncommon to spend between 30 to 40 hours doing a review. A lot of that depends on how well the document that you're reviewing, which is called the self-study, which is provided by the university, if the self-study is very well written and you're experienced, then you could probably do the work in about 12 hours. But if the self-study is not as clear as you would like it to be, and if you're a person just kind of cutting your teeth on this, you could easily spend 30 hours trying to figure this out. But the more time you spend on it before the visit, the less time you'll probably spend on it while you're there, the less challenging it'll be while you're on site.
And I think, Jason, one thing to reinforce there, since the program evaluator is going to be trying to write strengths and weaknesses for the program, if it's been a very, very good self-study, you just found yourself a strength.
Yes.
Praise.
Yes, I would agree. I did a visit a couple years ago, and the self-study was so well written that our team chair recommended it as a sample or as a model at the symposium, and it was used as a model. So as you can tell, my work was pretty easy on that visit, and it was a very good program. It was a very good visit, and lots of experienced people at the university, also people who had been involved with ABET. So
there you're talking about how self-evaluation is something the school itself does.
That is correct.
There's
a template that ABET provides and that the universities, the programs, will fill out basically that template. But some of it it's challenging because it's done once every 6 years generally. And if you don't have the benefit of having somebody on your staff involved with ABET, sometimes the interpretation of definitions can be a little challenging. But ABET does provide mentorship for that.
Yeah, I guess that ABET would like to hear that maybe some parts of this happen once every 6 years, like the administrative reviews and things like that, although they should be more frequent than that, with the whole concept of outcomes and assessment work that happens. The programs themselves have to be proving that there is continuous improvement and these outcomes are measured and all the rest of that that goes with it. And if they're doing that, they should be doing it on a fairly regular basis. And so they should be looking at the reason they're doing it, which is to prove themselves improving, but and also to meet the ABET requirements based on the various commissions. And so one would hope that it's not just something that pops up every 6 years, because if they get one, it's not going to be one of your really good reports.
So that six-year schedule is if a school gains accreditation, then they go through six-year cycles for reassessment. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Maximum.
Okay.
They could have to write a report in 3 years. So, you know, there are other professional organizations that have longer periods than six, but six or seven seems to be rather common amongst the profession.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you had anything else to add there, Jason. Before we go to break, I did want to mention the fact that one of the terms that people hear in our membership and we talk about at our meetings is the term lead society. And, of course, NSPS holds a position as lead society, and we're going to talk about what that entails when we come back. But that was formerly in the name of ACSM, and then when we merged, we actually had to petition for NSPS to take on that role, and we're granted that that right to be able to do that. And so with that right, of course, comes a lot of obligation. One thing I want to talk about when we get back from the break is that part of it. What is our lead society status and what it entails, and the criteria, the accreditation criteria. There's three that we're involved in. I want you guys to talk about that when we come back as well. So we've got a minute or so, Jason, before we go. Is there anything you want to follow up with on the schedule before we go to break?
Just to build on what Bob said, when he talks about measuring outcomes from the program, that's part of the, we mentioned the industrial advisory committees that are for each program. That's part of the feedback that is given to the program and documented in the self-study are the meetings that are held for the industrial advisory committees and the recommendations that they make to the university and how those recommendations are handled. So that is a not only a key component, but without it, it's you really can't measure the things that need to be measured for your self-study. So part of being a member of the IAC for whatever university you could participate in is a great way to give back as well.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. It certainly is a rewarding thing to do. So let's go to our second break, and we'll be back shortly.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's schonstedt.com.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick Stakes, that's Q-U-I-K Stakes, are not just for surveyors. They are great for family and community gardens. Go online to www.quickstake.com or contact your local land surveying supply dealer and get you a box of Quick Stakes. You'll love them every year when you plant your garden. Again, that's Quick Stakes, Q-U-I-K Stakes, the truly preferred way to stake and identify what's in your garden now.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back for our third segment with Jason and Bob today. This is the time of the show where our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, offers a gift to any of our listeners who responds with the correct answer to a question I'm going to ask you guys. And they just have to send it to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com. So the question I'm going to ask you, and you just have to answer the question, and then the person who sends it in will be the winner. What does PEV stand for?
Well, the way ABET uses the term today is Program Evaluator, but somebody reminded me of this, and Bob, you might know that it used to be called Program Evaluator Visitor. Does that ring a bell, Bob?
Yes, it does.
But they don't use that term anymore. They just call it Program Evaluator.
For the sake of our contest today, then the answer is going to be Program Evaluator.
Yes.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Before we went to break, I mentioned the concept of Lead Society, and this, as I mentioned earlier, when we transitioned our name from ACSM to NSPS, we went through an approval process with ABET to have that status. And Bob pointed out that during the break that we are considered Lead Society for the surveying geomatics programs. Perhaps there's a more technical name for that. And ASCE is I believe, Bob, the term is cooperating, isn't it?
Yes.
Cooperating society. So one of the things that's helpful from that perspective is there are a lot of folks out there in that are part of ASCE and their geomatics division that are able to work with us and assist us in having a strong team, so to speak. So anyway, Jason, maybe you could talk a little bit about that and the three accreditation areas under which our jurisdiction is, if that's the right word, for surveying geomatics programs, the three types of accreditation.
We do. The NSPS is responsible for accrediting surveying programs for three of the four ABET commissions. Our primary commission is the Applied Science Accreditation Commission, and we have two commissioners that serve on that commission. We also accredit surveying programs that are titled Surveying Engineering, and those are in the Engineering Accreditation Commission. And we also accredit engineering technology programs, and we have one commissioner that serves on the Engineering Technology Accreditation Commission. So we have four commissioners, and each one of those commissioners does have a backup, an alternate, and that's but our primary lead is on the applied science. And those are surveying programs that don't have the word engineering and don't have the word technology in them.
And so our breakdown, if you looked at that list of 31 programs you were talking about before, the predominant number would likely be in ASAC then, right?
Can I answer that question in 2 minutes?
Yeah.
I have it on a spreadsheet, and I can organize that in a minute. But I would say it's a mixture between engineering accreditation and applied science.
Right. Yeah, I know there are quite a number of engineering accreditation ones as well. Now, am I correct that accreditation is not just for four-year programs, right?
That is correct. We also accredit two-year programs as well.
And do I assume all of them fall into the ETAC, or is that correct?
Well, no, you can only be accredited by one commission.
I'm sorry, Bob. You
can only be accredited by one commission because your program has to meet the criteria for that commission. And it's
right,
hard
I understand.
To believe that
yeah,
you can
my question was, are the two-year programs all in the ETAC? Area or some of those in ASAC as well?
Some in ASAC.
Okay,
correct.
And they're both ETAC and ASAC do 2- and 4-year programs. EAC does 4-year programs only.
Okay. So the other two both do 2 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have 7 programs that are accredited by EAC, 12 that are applied by the Applied Science, and then the remainder of the 31 are accredited by the ETAC.
Okay. So I should know those 12. Numbers well, because I get a list of them every time I get a bill.
Well, the list changes. Unfortunately, some programs have, when we update this list about once a year, and once in a while, one of the programs will fall off the list. Either they don't want to be accredited or they've lost their accreditation. So it is a list that does change from year to year.
Is there any information or research out there in terms of schools that have the availability to seek accreditation but haven't? I get that question a lot, and I'm not suggesting that you guys know the answer either, but I get the question a lot. How many programs are there out there in the country? And quite honestly, I don't really know, because oftentimes they exist and nobody knows about them. So I don't know if that's something you guys have any insight into any more than I would or not, but I get that question a lot.
I can tell you the programs that are accredited because they're published on the ABET website, but in terms of programs that are not, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, where we run into it is we try to list programs that are available to students, and as I said, we get a lot of inquiries about it as well. But it's just really hard to keep track of all of that, because you just don't, unless somebody tells you about it, you're not going to know.
I would agree.
And they change every year. They can change every year.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, so, very, very true. They can.
It's not a stagnant thing. So all you can say when you get a question is, here are the current list of accredited programs.
Right, and that's what we always provide. And we, if we get information about a program that exists out there, even though it may not be accredited, we try to at least list that or provide it, have the information available. If somebody calls and says, I live in XYZ state, is there anything in my state? But as you said, that's really hard to keep up with. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that is of interest, when you mentioned that we have 2 commissioners on ASAC and 1 each on EAC and ETAC, that's something that comes along after you have some experience primarily, right? I mean, there's certain qualifications for that.
In a perfect world, ABET likes to see a person, a program evaluator, with 5 visits before they're nominated to serve on the commission. But that, as Bob said earlier, there have been exceptions. ABET makes exceptions for different things. And in terms of getting commissioners, we've made exceptions for that in the past. But generally, once a person has had 5 visits, they'll be nominated by the lead society to serve as a commissioner. And nomination time for the next cycle is coming up right now. We were notified this week. That'll be happening. And basically, we put forth... Or I, as the society liaison and the chairman of the NSPS ABET committee, I will get some names and make those recommendations to our committee, and then basically it's the committee that will vote on those positions. I will tell you right now, we've been short of commissioners and qualified people to serve, so... this year, I think we'll have all of our seats filled, but we don't have all of our alternate positions filled. And so we have a very shallow pool of people to choose from. So it's so important that, you know, we're doing this program and getting the word out for people to participate, because it's, like I said, it's a long-term commitment, but it also takes a few years to gain the experience to become nominated for the as a commissioner.
Well, but there are some people that are quite happy in being program evaluators.
Oh, I will tell you, just because some people do excellent jobs as program evaluators, but if you serve on the executive committee, now you become a team chair, and a team chair is responsible for the coordination of the visit and dealing with the university, dealing with the commission, but also as a team chair, you'll be the person responsible for setting up the visit to the university. And after the program, or after we've done the on-site visit, the program evaluator's job is completed, but the team chair's job remains. He will be working with that university up until the summer meeting. And so, and you will not, as a commissioner, you may not necessarily be working on a surveying program. Chances are you won't be, because there's so many different programs in the Applied Science Commission. So, yes, absolutely what Bob says. Some people make excellent program evaluators, and when it comes time to be the potential for being a team chair, some people don't have as much interest in that as they do just going on visits on a regular basis.
So is the commissioner position a certain amount of time?
Serving as a commissioner, you are much more involved with the program visit, so you don't necessarily have all the homework to do that a program evaluator will do regarding subject matter, but the commissioner's responsibility, serving as team chair, you'll be responsible for coordinating the visit and setting up all the appointments in cooperation with the university. Following the visit, you'll be working with the university to help them fulfill any weaknesses or deficiencies that may have been identified during.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Quick Stakes, that's QUIK Stakes, are not just for surveyors. They are great for family and community gardens. Go online to www.quickstake.com or contact your local land surveying supply dealer and get you a box of Quick Stakes. You'll love them every year when you plant your garden. Again, that's Quick Stakes, QUIK Stakes, the truly preferred way to stake and identify what's in your garden now.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Right. Welcome back for our fourth and final segment for today. I've been informed that maybe we went off the air for a little bit, so I hope we didn't lose too much. But as we go into this last segment, there's a couple of things we want to cover. I had asked a question about the process schools go through for accreditation or reaccreditation, and Bob, if you can talk about that, and then Jason, we do want to talk about PEVs and requirements for that and need for them. So, Bob, if you would talk about the preparations part for accreditation.
Sure. The school is going to make a decision that accreditation would benefit the students in those programs. And when they make that decision, they will contact ABET. And ABET will put them on a list of schools that are going to be visited, but they'll put them on there tentatively. And then there will be conversations between the school and, in this case, the Baltimore office, and the school will start filling out the self-studies. And there are workshops put on by ABET for the schools in how to do this, just like there are workshops for program evaluators. When that self-study is received, then they will be scheduled for a visit. A team chair is then selected, and he or she knows that this is a first-time visit. It's marked. And so there could be more conversations going on once the school meets the team chair at the summer meetings of the commission. That's an option open to them that now everybody takes. And a good team chair will make sure they've read that self-study right off the bat, and I know where schools have said, I guess we're not ready yet. But usually they don't come in and start the process and go for an accreditation visit the next year. It's usually a two-year process.
So if a school were going to seek accreditation and they got into doing their self-study and all the things they need to do preparing for the visit, if they make a determination that perhaps they're not ready, it's not as though they're just shut out. They just continue their work until they are ready. Is that accurate?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. So it's not a you apply and then you have a cutoff date after which you have to reapply, so to speak?
Well, there is a cutoff date, and that's when the self-studies have to be in. So if the self-study isn't received by ABET headquarters, then they take you off the list of schools to be visited. But if it
right.
comes in, if it comes in, then a team chair is assigned, then there is this meeting, and the team chair gets the self-study, and then they'll, like I said, a good team chair will turn around and read that quickly and get back to the school if there are any glaring problems with it.
And then for the reaccreditation process, the school obviously is aware of time frame for that, I suppose, and
The reaccreditation, they will be notified that their program or programs are coming up for review or loss of accreditation, and that will happen basically a year ahead of time.
I'm going to throw this question out, and but I don't really expect you to know the answer, but I assume there are programs that do not get reaccreditation.
That's correct, and that is that's an exception to the rule. The commissions decide through a process and then a final vote how long the accreditation should be awarded. And most of them, it's now either a three-year visit, 3 years in a visit, or 6 years in a visit, or 3 years in a report. And all of those decisions the commission makes. If the commission says that this program does not rise to the level of being worthy of being accredited or reaccredited, if it's a reaccreditation, you can't go directly to not to accredit. It has to go through a show cause stage, which means it still is accredited, but it's on the verge of not being accredited. If it's a new program and the vote is not to accredit, the school has a chance to appeal that, and the appeal comes to the board of directors.
To the ABET board of directors?
Yes, to the ABET board of directors. And then a committee is set up to hear the appeal from the school. In the case of it not being worthy of accreditation, you cannot go from an accredited program to not to accredit without going through what is known as a show cause stage. And the show cause is approved by the commission, and the school has 3 years in which to either get that program back up or lose accreditation.
Before we go to Jason on the PEV part, one of the questions I hear sometimes is, why seek accreditation? What's the benefit? And I'm thinking in some cases the universities want it to happen because of the prestige involved, perhaps, but what's the good answer to that question?
Well, the good answer, in my opinion, is the prestige for the school, the prestige for the student, and possibly being in compliance with the model law, if not the state law.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of societies have a requirement that you graduate from an accredited program.
Right. Well, Jason, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
I said surveying isn't consistent. The model law is, but surveying.
Right. Well, Jason, you're going to get about 6 minutes to tell us your plea for PEVs.
What I like to tell people is if you're interested in becoming a program evaluator, to contact Kurt, and then he will send your information to me, and then you and I can have a discussion. For the program evaluators to learn what it takes to become a program evaluator, you can visit the ABET website, which is www.abet.org. And right at the top of the page, there's a link for program evaluators. And if you click on that link, it'll tell you everything that you need to know. I think we have shared with people the toughest part, letting you know that it's not an automatic, you know, it's just not something that you look at, submit an application in a couple hours, and then you'll be done. It's really a commitment that'll take you a fair amount of time to really get into the cycle with things, and I tell people don't be discouraged about some of your first visits if you don't go on visits right away. But go through that, go through the information, submit your application. That application will then come to me, and then I will submit it to the ABET or the NSPS ABET board for vetting. There's a topic of discussion right now within our committee for people who are licensed professionals as land surveyors versus people who may not be licensed but may hold a PhD, and there's not a consistent, we don't have a consistent policy within our program right now. And so if you have contacted me, I think I've contacted everyone that has made inquiries, but specifically for the people that are not licensed but do hold PhDs, don't be discouraged from applying, because I think we'll be coming up with a policy soon, before next spring, so that our new folks can attend the face-to-face training in the springtime in Baltimore.
Isn't it also true that those who are licensed but not graduates of a program shouldn't be discouraged? They're eligible, aren't they?
Yes, that is correct.
I'm not sure if that's always been the case, but perhaps since outcomes-based has come along. I don't really know the answer to that, but I do, again, that's another question I hear quite often. I can't be one because I'm not a graduate of a program. But that's not true.
I agree.
I think that being a program evaluator and being involved with ABET is one of the best professional development things people can do. And I have never been on a visit, whether as a team chair or a program evaluator, where I didn't learn something that I could use in my classroom or use in administrative functions. And I've been on over 35 visits.
And you just pointed out something, Bob, that might be a good selling point for us.
And
maybe
people
should talk to the state licensing boards so people can get the continuing education credits for being a PEV.
Absolutely.
That would be very
people,
good.
For people in the academy, this counts as professional development and society work when it comes to annual evaluations. And if your school where you're teaching has accredited programs, that brings it up a notch also. So to to get involved as a practitioner, God, you're a wonderful person. You really love the profession.
And you'll find the people. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, if you're in the academy, by God, start.
What were you going to say, Jason?
You'll find that the people that are involved with ABET are very motivated people. They're highly professional, and they're very responsive. And that's been the case that I've experienced in my whole time with ABET. And so it's a very good group of people to be involved with.
Well, believe it or not, you did that in less than 6 minutes. So in the few seconds we've got remaining, I want to thank you both for being with me today and for your dedication and your diligence in being involved in this program and for everything you do to make it strong and to help NSPS be strong in its obligations, because it's really important for us to want to fulfill our obligations well. And folks like you and lots of other people, Steve Frank couldn't be with us today, or Steve Johnson couldn't be with us today, but we've had, over the years, we've had good leadership, and we feel as though that leadership is strong again. And so I can't thank you both enough for everything you do to help us make that happen.
Well, you're welcome.
Anytime.
So hopefully we will get some questions from this show, and as I say to many of my guests, perhaps we end up with another one at some point in time. I know there are lots of things in detail that we weren't able to talk about today, but I did want to give everybody as good an overview as I think we can, and hopefully we accomplish that. So maybe you two can think further after you go back and listen to this on the tape or on the DVD or whatever way you're able to listen to it, and say, gee, we should have said that, we should have said something else. So maybe we'll be able to do it again sometime.
I welcome the opportunity.
And again, thank you both for participating. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been enjoyable.
Have a great day.
Bye.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.